Welcome to Locus Focus. I'm Barbara Bernstein, your host for this weekly conversation about our place on the planet. As the climate warms and the need to reduce carbon emissions reaches a crisis level, two issues converge. How do we keep ourselves safely cool during extreme heat waves while also reducing our carbon emissions? Today we talk with Greer Ryan, Oregon Clean Buildings Policy Manager with Climate Solutions, and Dylan Plummer, Senior Campaign Representative for the Sierra Club, about the growing movement in Oregon to electrify everything. Dylan and Greer, welcome to this heat wave episode of Locus Focus.
Hey there, thanks for having us.
Well, it's interesting timing for this show that we're going to be talking about how to deal with the ever-increasing dangers and threats of heat waves that we're entering, I guess, the first bona fide heat wave of the summer in Portland. And while this one is like getting us all freaked out, the reality of it is this is kind of what would have been a normal heat wave in the past if we hadn't had the heat dome last summer to frighten the bejesus out of us. But meanwhile, because of what's going on in the rest of the country, I think it's also a continuing wake-up call about what we are facing in the future. So I first wanted to talk a little bit about the concerns that we have about this increasing tendency towards hotter weather and what issues we really need to raise.
Yeah, and I can take that.
Go for it, Dylan.
So basically, you know, as you mentioned, Oregon and, you know, the entire country and the entire planet are increasingly experiencing these devastating heat waves, including the Pacific Northwest heat dome event we experienced last summer, which actually killed right around 100 people in the state and hundreds of people across the region. And I think this is just a really grave reminder that the climate crisis is no longer some intangible thing that is going to happen to people in the future, but rather a crisis that we're facing right here, right now, and that will disproportionately impact the most vulnerable among us, whether they're communities of color, unhoused folks, or just low-income households. And so, also like you mentioned, there's this new push in the state looking towards electrification, not only to reduce our carbon emissions by transitioning our energy system from the direct use of fossil fuels to clean electricity powered by 100% renewable energy, but also because there's these new electric appliances such as heat pumps that provide extremely high efficiency heating and cooling in the face of, you know, what we can expect to be the new normal of severe heat waves in the summer and then unexpected cold snaps and freezes in the winter.
Well, one of the things that I wonder about is, do we still have to convince people that things are getting hotter? Because, I mean, I've been in Oregon for a really long time, and I remember many, many instances where we'll have temperatures over 95 for a week and sometimes 2 weeks. So on one hand, this is not that abnormal what we're experiencing, and I also don't think what's going on in the East Coast is that abnormal either. However, I think we have to look at it in a bigger picture, and I think for a lot of us, since we experienced the heat dome last summer and saw temperatures rise in Portland that would rival the worst temperatures in Phoenix, Arizona, that it's made us see a more normal type of heat wave in a different context. So do you think that there's still people out there, and particularly elected officials, who are saying, oh, there's really no problem because we always have had heat waves?
Great. I'll go ahead and take this one.
Sure.
Yeah, I think that there are fewer people who are flat out denying that climate change is happening and the climate crisis is here and affecting Oregonians. I think last year really was a wake-up call for so many. Although I'm sure there are folks who are downplaying, I think it is more of a delay tactic that we're seeing now from oil and gas companies, from some folks in power, legislators and regulators, where they're looking to what they see as, you know, solutions to the climate crisis that are really not going to cut it, where it's avoiding cutting fossil fuel use, trying to invest in more and more gas infrastructure, as an example, as, you know, a strategy to meet Oregon's climate goals that is really just delaying action that would be most helpful and avoid increased investments in fossil fuels that Oregonians are going to foot the bill of.
Every time that I think we're really moving ahead and really understanding the dangers of fossil fuel usage, the fossil fuel industry comes up with a new ploy, whether it's renewable natural gas or hydrogen or whatever. So I'm just wondering how we really can help the legislature recognize the fallacy of these newfangled proposals by the fossil fuel industry and keep promoting the need for true electrification.
I think that's a great question. And, you know, studies like the one the Sierra Club commissioned with Synapse that I think we'll talk about today are a good example of just highlighting how much better electrification is for folks and how much more efficient electric appliances are, as well as, you know, highlighting the risks of increasing gas use in the state and including renewable natural gas, which is primarily methane. I think those are key strategies and just telling legislators, you know, why it's important that we have healthier, cleaner buildings and transportation is key.
I was just going to add, too, that, you know, I think it's really critical for us to be highlighting the fact that these fossil fuel companies, you know, such as Northwest Natural, one of the largest fossil fuel companies in our state and the largest gas utility, they have a vested interest in kind of continuing to perpetuate these kind of false solutions or this notion that, you know, these existing corporations that we've seen, you know, deceive the public for decades now about their products are going to be the ones who will lead on the investments into a clean energy future. I think that, you know, pointing to the long history that the fossil fuel industry has of, you know, outright misleading elected officials and the general public about the effects of their, you know, fuels on public health, on the climate, what have you, and saying, like, this is no different. The solutions for the climate crisis aren't going to come from the corporations responsible for causing.
Well, I think that you mentioned the efficiency and the just incredible energy savings, amongst other things, of really converting everything to being electrically powered. I have a own personal story. Our air conditioner went out on the first day of the heat wave in June. I guess that we call that the mini heat wave. And so it was an opportunity to really rethink our lives in a way, and at least our energy lives. And I did some more research about heat pumps because it'd been my fantasy for quite a while to just get rid of all of our gas appliances and just go electric. But that's not that easy to do, and we can talk about that a little bit later, why, particularly if people have strapped for money, it's really hard to do that. But we decided to take the plunge and to get a heat pump, which happily to me meant not just having air conditioning in the summer, but it also meant that we wouldn't have to be using our gas furnace at all, or hardly at all, in the winter. So I posted this on the Facebook posting for this show yesterday, and several people responded, "I love my heat pump. I really love my heat pump." And so I wanted to talk a little bit about why heat pumps are so lovable. In fact, I'm looking forward to seeing how great the heat pump is during this really extensive heat wave. It did great for the last mini one we had. But to talk about why they are so more effective and why they're better for the people that are using them.
So glad you did that. They're kind of magic, right?
Yeah, in a way, it's amazing. Even the cooling, like, I've always had trouble with the air conditioner because my studio is in the basement and it gets so cold down there with air conditioning that I can't even work. And even though it's still cold down there with the heat pump, I feel like the coolness is much more gentle, which is what somebody has said to me. The heating and cooling feels a lot more gentle than it does when you're using gas or using an electric air conditioner. So why is that?
Yeah, I mean, I think the key is that they, you know, move heat around rather than trying to create it. That's my best understanding.
Or trying to create cold is the same thing too, right? Because air conditioner is just a blast of cold air.
Right, right. So this was explained to me recently, is we actually have lived with heat pumps in our lives in a way for a long time, because that's basically what refrigerators are in your kitchen. So they keep, you know, the air inside the refrigerator cool by pumping the heat out. And if you put your hands behind or underneath your refrigerator, you'll feel warmer air there. But it doesn't really affect the ambient air temperature of your kitchen. You just notice inside your refrigerator is very cold. The cool thing about heat pumps for space heating and cooling is that they can move heat in both directions. So, you know, you can have your home cooler by pumping heat out effectively in the summer, and then in the winter it pumps heat in. That's, you know, a very layperson kind of explanation of it, but it made a lot of sense to me when I heard that. And that's opposed to, you know, kind of traditional resistance heating, which tries to heat up the air using, you know, coils or other technology, or traditional air conditioners, which, as you said, yes, pump cool air in, and it is a bit more aggressive in that way. You can really feel it.
Well, the other thing, I understand that air conditioners put out a lot of hot air into the outside, and that can actually intensify heat islands and other issues that we have in urban areas. Does a heat pump also put out hot air, or is it a gentler way of removing the heat from the house?
That's actually a great question. I'm not sure what the comparison is with the traditional AC, but I do know that they're, you know, more energy efficient overall than traditional heating and cooling units. As much as 10% more efficient, I think, for some units, which is wild. So I guess I don't know about the increase in outdoor air, but I'll say that the energy savings that you can get from switching to a efficient electric heat pump are pretty significant.
I also noticed that the heat pump is off a lot more than the air conditioner was. And the other thing is that it keeps our house at a steady temperature that we want it to be, no matter what it seems to be outside. I don't know how it does that compared, because we have an old house with old ducts, but it seemed to make everything magically more comfortable last week when it was hot. The question is, I guess, how do we get this great technology to a wider population?
And I can speak to that. I think first and foremost, it's really critical that we lay out, you know, our principles, which is that when we're making this clean energy transition, and absolutely installing heat pumps in homes is part of that clean energy transition or just transition, it's critical that the financial onus isn't on individuals or households, but rather, is being taken care of through systemic policy. And so that's why, we were so excited to see the extreme heat relief bills passing in the legislature last session that increased subsidies for heat pump installation. And, you know, for me and Eugene, I've been looking to the incredible work of the Portland Clean Energy Fund. They just announced a new slew of grants, I think with about $9.99 million going to the Clean Energy Project's efforts to install heat pumps and other high-efficiency electric appliances in homes, I think 50 homes a year for 5 years. So, these programs are already taking place in Oregon, and there's great models not only in Portland but across the country for how we can be making sure that there are funds available so that we're transitioning homes without, you know, saying, great, you know, you want to make this transition, well, cough up your however many hundred or $1,000 to make it, and especially prioritizing those most vulnerable, like I mentioned at the beginning of this interview, to extreme weather events. That's low-income households with communities of color, and unhoused folks, and making sure that those folks are kind of at the front of this energy transition, so that they're not left to bear, you know, any resulting increase in costs.
Well, you're listening to Locus Focus on KBOO Community Radio in Portland, Oregon, Seattle stations KBFG LPFM and KODX LPFM, KMUN and KCBB in Astoria, Oregon, KCEI in Taos, New Mexico, Radio Free Moscow in Idaho, and Radio Tacoma. And today we're talking with Greer Ryan, who's Oregon Clean Buildings Policy Manager with Climate Solutions, and Dylan Plummer, who you just heard, who's a senior campaign representative with the Sierra Club. And we're talking about the growing movement in Oregon to electrify everything. Well, when we just installed our heat pump, it was a big chunk of change we had to put out. And actually, I don't think we could have or wanted to wait to find out about some programs that would subsidize it. But I also have the feeling that we're kind of in that middle area where it's a bit of a stretch to pay for this thing, but I'm not sure that we'd qualify as low income. So I'm wondering, are there programs for kind of more middle income people who would like to make the transition?
That's a great question. And a conversation that we've been having with the Energy Trust of Oregon, which is an organization that partners with utilities in the state, as well as working with the Public Utility Commission statewide, in order to provide subsidies for the adoption of more efficient appliances. And, we've been in ongoing conversations about having the organization change its policies to increase the subsidies currently available for heat pumps and to reduce barriers for all households to adopt these really incredible appliances that we know are going to be so central in reducing our emissions and increasing our resiliency in the face of the climate crisis.
So how soon would this be happening?
You know, there's a varying there's varying opinions on what needs to happen for these programs to really take shape at the Energy Trust of Oregon. You know, Greer can speak to some of the excellent work that she's been doing with the Rebuilding Task Force. That's the Resilient and Equitable Buildings Task Force, which the state legislature has convened to provide recommendations for the upcoming long session. And there's also the Public Utility Commission's docket looking at the future of gas in the state in light of Governor Brown's executive order. And one of the kind of major topics has been raised by environmental groups and environmental justice and social justice groups at this kind of venue has been directing the Energy Trust of Oregon to really explicitly subsidize heat pumps and specifically subsidize fuel switching from a gas furnace that's directly burning the fossil fuel in your home to using these high efficiency electric heat pumps that will be, you know, increasingly powered by renewable energy as our state's grid is moving towards 100% by 2040.
Now, I will throw out another caveat about heat pumps in the winter. I'm looking forward to using that heat pump. I'm hoping maybe 90% of the time, but they don't work unless you get a super expensive one below about 35 degrees. So in Portland, that's not much of an issue because we don't have that many days that are really freezing during the winter. But it is a concern. And we have this hybrid system. We had a relatively new gas furnace. So it's connected to the heat pump. And when it goes below 35 degrees outside, then automatically the heat source switches from being the heat pump to being the gas furnace. And that's all well and good. But there's part of me that would really like to move totally away from gas. And I'm not sure if heat pump technology is really capable of doing that in cooler climates yet.
You know, that's such an important point. And actually, I think it really is because heat pump technology has evolved so much. There are what are called cold weather heat pumps that places like Ithaca, New York, and Maine are, you know, really adopting quickly so that homes can be fully electric and still be warmed by heat pump technology in the winter. So I think the what you pointed out was right, which is there's different kinds of heat pumps, some that work better in colder weather. I think it makes a lot of sense for, you know, existing homes that maybe have gas furnaces that, you know, don't need to be decommissioned or pulled out quickly to adopt electric heat pumps to offset 80%+ of their energy use. I think that can make some sense. But for new homes or for buildings that need replacement of their heating system, the cost benefits over time of investing upfront in an all-electric, high-efficiency heat pump that can work in the, you know, cold weather months as well as the warm weather months is really just the right way to go in a place like Oregon. And, you know, to your point here, I think it's critical that we incentivize and make sure that it's not just a small subset of folks who can afford to transition to electric heat pumps, but really everyone. And I think, you know, the programs focused on lower income communities are critical as a first step. We also need to make sure that, you know, moderate income Oregonians can adopt these technologies as well. And part of that is manufacturing and making sure that we have enough heat pumps and enough workforce to go around, because I think the demand is going to increase significantly in the coming years. And another part of that is expanding programs, taking advantage of federal dollars that are coming down the pike and making sure that those can go towards these solutions as well.
Well, I found it interesting. We talked to a couple of different companies when we were deciding between, because first we were going to get an air conditioner. And we had one guy come in from one company who had installed our furnace, our gas furnace. And I asked him, what about heat pumps? And his eyes lit up. And it turns out he's like a real big promoter of heat pumps. And unfortunately, the heat pump he was going to sell us, we found out was not going to cut it. So we went to a different place, cost almost twice as much money, but it turns out I think we've got a really good deal there. But that guy too was telling me how he's putting in a lot more heat pumps and air conditioners now. And so I thought that was kind of an interesting take from the industry that heat pumps are definitely on the move here.
So I was going to say they're absolutely increasingly being adopted by homes. In Washington, we have some preliminary results showing that 90% of new residential homes are being constructed with heat pumps for heating and cooling. And that change is, you know, just really accelerating more and more every year. And it also is a good segue to talk about this report that Synapse Energy Economics just recently did for the state of Oregon, looking at, you know, one, what would the impact be to the grid if all buildings electrified? Two, what are the economics of electrifying and specifically adopting these high efficiency heat pumps for heating and cooling for consumers? And then three, what are the emissions reductions associated? And basically their results showed that it's electrification and electrification specifically with these new high efficiency heat pumps is a win-win-win across the board. It saves consumers money in the long run because of decreased electricity bills. It saves our grid and our energy system money because it allows us to transition off of maintaining like a dual fuel grid and to put our resources into hardening our electric grid and really building that out. And then finally, it, in conjunction with the state's House Bill 2021, which requires electric utilities to reach 100% renewable energy by 2040, we'll expect to see a huge decrease in emissions associated with buildings in the state, which is one of the largest sources of emissions currently.
Well, a lot of communities, or at least some communities, are now requiring that all new construction, in some places, like in Multnomah County, it's just Multnomah County buildings. But in some places, I think in Berkeley maybe, and a few others, that all new construction has to be fossil fuel free. So it's all electric. Do you have a sense of how many communities really have put those ordinances into place and how successful they've been?
Yeah, absolutely. So in California, you mentioned Berkeley. It was the first city to pass one of these policies in 2019, I believe. And since then, now we just had our 60th city in California pass a policy to mandate that new buildings be constructed with all electric. And it's really important to note that these policies aren't, you know, ripping out a gas stove in an existing building or telling someone that they can't use their gas furnace anymore, but rather, you know, kind of along the lines of that old expression, when you're in a hole, it's best to stop digging, making sure that all of the new construction that's going in is all electric. And so, you know, California has really been leading the way, but we just saw New York City pass a similar piece of legislation, Denver, Colorado, and in Washington, Seattle had a requirement for new commercial buildings to be all electric, and a few other cities had passed similar ones. And just recently, the State Building Code Council voted to approve a requirement for all new commercial buildings across the state to be all electric, which is a huge step. And they're currently considering a similar statewide requirement for new residential. So really, I think in the next couple of years, we can expect to see this across the country. And here in Oregon, in Eugene, where I live, there's been a really robust coalition of racial justice and environmental justice and climate justice organizations that have come together calling on the city to pass the first one of these policies here in the state. And then additionally to start looking at creating a roadmap to electrify existing buildings and to do so equitably and, you know, prioritizing those vulnerable communities that we know are so vulnerable to the impacts of the climate crisis and, you know, have historically been marginalized and left behind by other policies to subsidize, you know, housing and energy efficiency.
Well, Dylan, I tend to recall that the ordinance that you talked about in Eugene to mandate all new construction to be electric, that it was supposed to actually have been voted on a few months ago, and it sort of got pushed ahead in time. I want to talk a bit about, is that correct, that it this what you're talking about now was something that actually should have been passed a few months ago?
Well, you know, if you ask me and you ask a lot of the advocates that I work with, this policy should have been passed many years ago just because of the urgency of the climate crisis and the need for action. But absolutely, there have been ongoing conversations, a work session this April that we were optimistic would see some forward movement, ended up just really digging into some of the technical questions around, you know, what a requirement might look like and what other cities have done. And so actually, coincidentally, the city council is having their next work session since that spring meeting tonight at 5:30 to discuss, you know, this kind of continued conversation around what a draft ordinance might look like, you know, what buildings would be required to be all electric, and if there were certain industries that would be allowed to exemptions to, you know, continue using gas for very specific purposes like brewing and coffee roasting. Because one thing that we've been trying to make very clear is, you know, the majority of the emissions associated with buildings are coming from the direct use of gas for heating and water heating. But if, you know, you're a coffee roaster and you're using gas to roast beans, you're using a pretty non-substantial amount of gas for that process. And we don't want to, you know, impact our local businesses that make Eugene and that make all of Oregon such a great place to live. So we're definitely looking at, you know, solutions to mitigate the impact of small businesses while simultaneously moving our city away from, and our state away from, reliance on the direct use of a fossil fuel that we know is having these disastrous impacts on our climate, and also increasingly, as the research grows, having disastrous impacts on public health and indoor and outdoor air quality.
Greer, what's happening in Portland meanwhile?
I think there's a lot happening in Portland. One really cool thing that's happening right now is that a lot of environmental justice representatives, advocates, are working with the city of Portland on this initiative called the Build Shift Initiative, where they're investigating, you know, how can emissions be reduced in commercial and multifamily units, so those big buildings. They've come up with a system called the HART standards, which would, you know, allow the city to potentially move on reducing emissions while taking into account health and equity, affordability, anti-displacement kind of co-benefits of one of these policies. So that's really exciting. Multnomah County is, you know, already a leader in the state by having adopted last year a resolution to ensure new public buildings, so county buildings, are built all electric. So a lot of stuff, yeah, a lot of stuff going on here. There could always be more, of course. And then at the state level, there's a lot of action on building efficiency and making buildings more resilient and reducing emissions to meet state climate goals. That high efficiency electric appliances are going to play a key role in.
Well, you're listening to Locus Focus on KBOO Community Radio in Portland, Oregon, Seattle stations KBFG LPFM and KODX LPFM, KMUN and KCBB in Astoria, Oregon, KCEI in Taos, New Mexico, Radio Free Moscow in Idaho, and Radio Tacoma. And today we're talking with Greer Ryan, Oregon Clean Buildings Policy Manager with Climate Solutions, and Dylan Plummer, Senior Campaign Representative with the Sierra Club. And we're talking about the growing movement in Oregon to electrify everything. Well, I think that what there's two things that we have to be looking at, and one is changing public policy so we have ordinances and policies that support electrification, and the other part of it is educating residents and consumers to understand the importance of them thinking away from gas, let's say. So I feel like I'm a good example of somebody who's been going through this process. I've been thinking about electrifying for years, and I had the wonderful, you know, fortune of having our AC go out. So it forced me to make this decision. But I wonder if there's things in place that can help homeowners and landlords, for that matter, to start to understand an easier path to electrify than I think the way it seems now. Because until I started researching it, I thought getting a heat pump was, you know, exorbitantly expensive and was going to be really hard. And I did some research where I wasn't understanding the difference between air source and ground source. And so I was reading this thing in England, and where I guess they do a lot of ground sourcing. And it sounded like you had to dig up your entire yard in order to install the heat pump. And I talked to a friend in Longview who has a heat pump, and she said, no, 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 don't worry about that. You're going to do air source. So how do we help people who are thinking about making the change? First of all, how do we get people to think about making the change? And then how do we walk them through it so they don't think that it's a really snarly, impossible process to go through?
Yeah, I'll go ahead and take this one. I think, you know, when folks think about making changes in their lives that can help make their homes more climate resilient, both reducing climate emissions and also adapting to the new climate reality, which is, you know, more intense, more regular heat waves, storms, et cetera. Electrifying your home and making it more efficient, weatherizing it, making sure windows and insulation are, you know, up to date, really is kind of the best way to do that. We spend so much of our time in buildings, in our homes where we work and live and learn. And they are, you know, the number two source of climate emissions in the state. So I think that's really critical, just understanding how much of our time and energy is spent in buildings. Thinking about, you know, I find this really powerful. This is maybe the most powerful stat that I've heard. The fact that methane gas, when burned with gas stoves, for instance, can increase child asthma rates significantly. The likelihood of getting childhood asthma is 42% higher for children in homes with gas stoves, according to, you know, one big study done a few years back. And that's just wild, you know, when we're worried so much about, especially during a pandemic that is a respiratory illness, worried so much about air quality and kind of the health of our homes. I think that should be something people really think about. The answer to your question about, you know, kind of how to go about this, I would say there's some really good resources out there. One being Electrify Now, which is a nonprofit org here in Oregon, has a great website where they have a lot of resources on kind of how to go about electrifying your home and transportation. So I would point people to that website. It kind of can help answer, demystify, debunk some concerns and questions, as well as point you to resources for installers and other folks to ask about your specific home, which is great.
Well, I looked at a website that had the pros and cons of heat pumps, and the cons were kind of unnerving, and it turned out they were mostly irrelevant. Again, this was this English website that I was on. But I wonder how to steer people away from the places that are making it seem too complicated and finding ways for people to understand that it's doable, and but the steps you have to take in order to make it doable. And for some people, yeah, for us, we had this, for one thing, we had the 240 outlet from the old air conditioner, so it was really easy to set up. But some people might have to rewire their houses. So it becomes really kind of sometimes seeming like an unsurmountable problem to go ahead and to electrify.
Right. And that's why one of the big pieces we're pushing for, right, isn't talking about individual consumer choice, but rather talking about these citywide, statewide, and national policies that will put in place not only subsidies for the transition, but also programs to make it happen and to take care of, you know, a lot of that thinking for homeowners. And a big part of that, right, is as the Pacific Northwest is facing a housing crisis, and we're, you know, our local elected officials, our state elected officials are doing everything they can to try to restrict barriers to building new housing. There's hopefully a ton of new housing going in all of our communities. It's critical that is all electric so that these new homeowners, right, or tenants aren't faced with the same problem. And that, you know, as we're expanding our building stock, we're doing so in a way that's taking full advantage of our increasingly clean energy. And I think, too, to speak to your other point about, you know, how do we convince folks of the benefits? I mean, really the science is all there. The data is all there. It like in Eugene, RMI just did a report as a nonpartisan think tank that showed that an all-electric home saves $1,600 in upfront construction costs and has a $3,500 net present cost savings over a 15-year period, and that it reduces 74% of a home's emission by transitioning to all electric and off of gas, which, you know, is greater than the equivalency of giving up a vehicle for the home, right? And so, you know, there's been a long conversation in the climate movement around, you know, consumer responsibility and individual choice versus these systems, and, you know, efforts to move away from single occupancy vehicles. And I think that, you know, absolutely that still needs to be made. But when we're talking about our homes, our buildings, like Vera mentioned, we spend so much of our time in them. We spend so much energy to regulate their temperatures, to run all the functions that we need. And if we're creating these systemic policies that will transition them to running on all electric, and we can have emissions reductions at 74% here in Eugene, and that'll likely go up to close to 100%. In the next decade or so, then, you know, that's just such a clear way to reduce emissions, and one that we think that all policymakers at all levels of government should be working to increase access to and reduce barriers to as quickly as possible.
Well, Dylan, the other reality is Portland, and I think also Eugene, are cities that are largely still old homes and old buildings. I mean, it's changing in some ways very sadly in Portland, where they're tearing down some really nice old buildings and putting up, I think, kind of monstrous new buildings. And I'm not sure that those new buildings are electrified totally. But I wonder what to do for all the people who live in old homes like myself, which are definitely a challenge to retrofit for electricity. Is there a way to not leave all of us behind?
I think that's top of mind for those of us thinking about building decarbonization in this state, because of exactly what you said. So many folks are living in aging existing homes, many of which are powered by electric resistance heating, which is, less efficient, but already electric. So I think, you know, the benefits of transitioning folks both on electric and gas, less efficient heating to electric heat pumps is going to be really critical. Doing that in a way where there's not a lot of energy waste. So pairing electrification programs with efficiency and making sure that folks have access to what's called weatherization, which is coming in kind of making the building envelope or the external part of the building more efficient, tighter, so there are fewer leaks and energy wasted, is really, really important. So programs that can pair dollars spent on those two things happening together is critical. And there's some really good models out there. Dylan mentioned the Portland Clean Energy Fund, which has raised so much money for, you know, climate-related improvements in the area. One of the first recipients of a lot of grant money for that is the Clean Energy or Community Energy Project based here in Portland. And they just do amazing work to help homeowners parse through the noise that you mentioned around how to do this, how to take your existing building and make it more efficient, electrify it, and make it more resilient to climate impacts. So as Dylan mentioned, expanding those kinds of projects is really critical. But I also wanted to just touch back on the question you raised earlier, Barbara, about what resources to look to and how to parse through that noise. And I think it's critical to look at the source. If the source is an oil or gas company, a fossil fuel company that's telling you what to do, I think you can be pretty critical about the information you're getting. And if you're, on the other hand, looking at a kind of independent study done by non-industry analysts, scientists, or folks that are advocating for a cleaner climate, I think you can probably feel pretty sure that you're going to get information that's actually going to make sense from a climate and public health perspective. I would always reach out to experts on the ground that are doing this kind of work, like Community Energy Project, looking to the Oregon Citizens Utility Board for information on things like affordability and what's going on at the state level, the Public Utility Commission, And then groups like Electrify Now, who make it their kind of passion project to help people adopt efficient electric appliances.
Well, there's this interesting thing about information and misinformation. One of the key lines that the gas industry has now for why you should stay with gas is that when we have electrical outages, which have become more common with extreme weather and the kind of outages we had two winters ago, they say, well, then if you have a gas, if you have gas water heater, you'll still have hot water. And if you have a gas insert stove or a freestanding radiant heater, you'll still have heat. And then I would see the environmental movement say, well, gas water heaters don't have pilots anymore. They have they have electrical ignitions, and so you're not going to have any hot water. And also basically saying the same thing about the gas stoves. Well, we have an old radiant heater that was installed in 1995, and that's what kept us warm in the winter of 2021 when we were without electricity for 3 days. We also have an electric water heater that has a pilot, and we had hot water for that whole time too. It wasn't enough to me to feel like I want to stay with gas, but it was, again, seeing that sometimes the climate activists aren't quite accurate in what they're saying either. So I wonder how we parse through all of that.
Yeah, I mean, that's a great point. I think the truth about gas appliances and whether or not they'll work in outages is that different appliances will require electricity for different uses depending on the appliance. And so it's a little nuanced, which doesn't make for easy taglines, but I think debunking oil and gas industry claims saying actually, you know, most gas appliances will not work during an outage because you need electricity to move the heat around, for instance, or you need electricity if you want to use your fan above your gas stove so that you're not inhaling a bunch of toxic methane, well, or NOx emissions, things that are really harmful for air pollution inside your home. So you really shouldn't be using your gas stove, even if you can turn it on.
Actually, how many of us use that fan? We have a fan. I think we use it way too little. And every time I have a show like this, I go home and think, I've got to start using that fan every time we use the stove. I have a feeling we're kind of typical. I talk to lots of people who don't use their fans. So that's another educational outreach that needs to happen more.
Yeah, I think a kind of understanding what folks can do to make appliances like gas stoves slightly less dangerous is critical, but really just there's no good level of methane that's being leaked into your home, right? And so having an emissions-free electric stove is really much safer in general. This is a little bit of a tangent, but I heard somebody reflect that he has two teenagers and he had just switched over to an electric stove, an induction stove, which is really, really safe. You know, you can basically put your hand on the induction stove very quickly after taking a pot off, and it's safe to the touch. And he feels better about leaving his teenagers home alone now that there's not a gas stove that they could accidentally leave on. And I thought that was an interesting safety point as well.
I just wanted to add a point too, which is, you know, we've seen this from the fossil fuel industry forever, which is trying to mire us in conversations about technicalities rather than addressing like the larger truth that we know, right? Which is in extreme weather that's caused by climate change, that's caused by burning fossil fuels. It's critical that we're moving to using clean, renewable energy. And the conversation shouldn't be, oh, well, gas is currently, you know, able to function in some cases with some appliances and outages. The conversation should be, what are the investments that we need to be making in our electricity grid to make it more resilient, to make it better able to serve the needs of our communities in these extreme weather events? Because the weather events aren't going away and the electric grid isn't going away. But if we're to have any hope of mitigating the worst impacts of the climate crisis and securing, you know, some kind of livable climate for ourselves, our communities, and for future generations, the gas system absolutely needs to go away. And so the conversation, the questions that we're asking shouldn't be, you know, what's better, gas or electric? It should be, how are we going to make the investments and when are we going to do it to ensure that our electrical grid is resilient? And, you know, the solutions are already out there, whether it's you know, creating microgrids and investing more heavily in battery storage and decentralized energy generation, a lot of projects that programs like the Portland Clean Energy Fund are already investing in. And so, yeah, I just would caution, you know, the listeners from you know, getting sucked into this kind of false dichotomy of gas versus electric, when it's really, you know, the gas industry versus our entire prospect of a future.
That's a good point. And you're listening to Locus Focus on KBOO Community Radio in Portland, Oregon, Seattle stations KBFG, LPFM, KODX, LPFM, KMUN and KCBB in Astoria, Oregon, KCEI in Taos, New Mexico, Radio Free Moscow in Idaho, and Radio Tacoma. And today we're talking with Dylan Plummer, who's senior campaign representative with Sierra Club, and Greer Ryan, Oregon Clean Buildings Policy Manager with Climate Solutions. Well, for the last part of the show, since I'm not sure if you're in air-conditioned spaces, but right now I'm at KBOO. It's nice and cool. I'm about to step out into some extreme heat. What words do you have of comfort or wisdom to the listeners who are going to be enduring 5 or 6 days of pretty intense heat for the next few days, both to think about in terms of their immediate comfort and how to maybe have further comfort and protection from extreme heat events in the coming years?
Well, I think that the first thing that I would say is that now is the time to start organizing in your community to push for electrification policies to ensure that, you know, Barbara, like you mentioned, there are less barriers to adopting these critical appliances like heat pumps and heat pump hot water heaters that will, you know, increase the efficiency of your home, increase your access to cooling, and increase your resiliency in the long time. And long term, while reducing your emissions. So, you know, I think my advice to anyone all the time is going to be: we're in a crisis, and it's elected officials have, you know, shown us time and time again that they're not able to act without a strong movement behind them, supporting them, and pushing back on the fossil fuel industry's lies. So, I'd say that, you know, as we experience this extreme heat. Thankfully, a little less extreme than last summer's heat dome, it's a critical reminder that, you know, we need to be doing everything we can to be transitioning our energy system to one that's powered by 100% renewable electricity. And we need to be doing so in a way that's equitable and prioritizing those in the front lines. And I'm curious, Greer, if you had anything you want to add to that.
I fully agree with that. I think, in particular, connecting with as much as you can community groups that are already engaged in this work is a good first step. And then, you know, in the just very short term sense, with these really high temperatures, I think it's critical to check in on neighbors, especially elderly folks and unhoused folks, to make sure that they have access to cool enough spaces. A lot of places in cities like libraries act as cooling centers during these heat waves. And I think, you know, frankly, they're life or death resources that we need a lot more investments in. But in the meantime, you know, as much as possible, we should be looking after each other to make sure that people are staying cool.
And I'm wondering how we can help people to navigate into rethinking their own cooling. I mean, I guess I don't know what the statistic is. I think maybe 50% of Portlanders now have air conditioning, maybe a little bit higher than that. I know in Seattle it's a lot lower. And until a few years ago, you didn't need air conditioning in Portland. So that's one of the things that people are starting to understand. One of the concerns I had when our air conditioning went out during that first heat wave was I wasn't so worried about that heat wave, but I was really worried about what are we going to do if there's another serious heat wave like we had last summer. So I think with those things in mind, how do we encourage people to take care of themselves as well as take care of the future of the planet?
This, I mean, brings us right back to talking about electric heat pumps. As much as we can, we should be making sure that our cooling technology that we're putting into buildings is as efficient as possible to reduce emissions and powered by renewable, clean electricity. So Dylan mentioned earlier the emergency heat relief bills that passed this year that were largely developed in response to last summer's heat wave by community groups, by environmental justice communities, really, you know, leading on this. To ensure that, you know, not only can folks have more access to electric heat pumps, but also that renters are able to access air conditioning, because previously landlords could prevent renters from installing air conditioning units, which is really not not safe during such high heat. So, you know, I think if you have the means to invest upfront in a high, you know, high efficiency electric heat pump for cooling and heating, you should. You should look into programs that exist to see if you're if you qualify for incentives, rebates, things like that for these kinds of technologies. And then everybody should be trying to make their, you know, where they live as efficient as possible, whether it's opening windows at night to let cool air in and closing blinds during the day to prevent sunlight from coming in. Like, there's lots of tips and tricks people can do. But the key is efficiency and high efficient appliances.
Actually, when our air conditioner broke, we went back into the old mode, the pre-air conditioning mode, and we were doing just that. And you can survive when it's 95 degrees or 97 degrees doing those things. When it's 116 degrees, it's a whole other story. I hope we don't, in my lifetime, have another heat wave like that. They're supposed to still be relatively rare, but not as rare as they were before last year. So the other thing, I guess, is how do we prevent future heat waves? What's the best way to go?
Yeah, and I'd say that, you know, one thing that you know, we haven't really touched on yet is really naming the corporations responsible. And here in Oregon, you know, when we're talking about the emissions associated with buildings, when we're talking about the barriers to electrifying, there's one corporation in particular that's on the, you know, tip of my tongue, which is Northwest Natural. You know, this is a publicly regulated private corporation that has shown time and time again it's more invested in getting kickbacks for its CEOs and its investors on Wall Street than it is in protecting our communities and reducing emissions. It's been selling legislators and elected officials completely false and misleading information about the viability of renewable natural gas and green hydrogen to replace gas in residential and commercial buildings. And it's, you know, to be perfectly honest, the number one barrier that we have in our state to reducing emissions and in turn, you know, reducing the frequency of these heat waves. So, you know, while it's important to be talking about the kind of individual steps that we can take, I always will try to redirect our attention and our focus towards taking on these kind of behemoth corporations that in no sense, you know, by no means have our community's best interests in mind, but rather are just focused on this kind of insatiable drive for expanding profits, even at the expense of, you know, hundreds of lives in a heat wave, and the tens of thousands, if not, you know, millions of lives on the line just here in Oregon, if the climate crisis is allowed to progress at the current rates.
Well, Dylan, thanks a lot for that. That is really sum up a whole lot of concerns that I've had about Northwest Natural for a long time, and I really like the way you put it. So thanks for saying that, and thanks to you and Greer for being on Locus Focus today. It's been great talking with you both.
Thank you. It's been great.
Thanks so much for having us, Barbara.
We've been talking with Greer Ryan, Oregon Clean Buildings Policy Manager with Climate Solutions, and Dylan Plummer, who's Senior Campaign Representative with the Sierra Club. And you've been listening to Locus Focus on KBOO Community Radio in Portland, Oregon, Seattle stations KBFG LPFM and KODX LPFM, KMUN and KCBB in Astoria, Oregon, KCEI in Taos, New Mexico, Radio Free Moscow in Idaho, and Radio Tacoma. If you're just tuning in and you'd like to hear what you missed, or you want your friends or family to hear this show, you can listen to a podcast on our website, kboo.fm/locus-focus. To hear previous episodes of this show or any of our KBOO Public Affairs programming, go to kboo.fm or listen on iTunes, Google Play, or wherever you get your podcasts. I want to give special thanks to the KBOO staff, who are doing an incredible job of not only keeping KBOO on the air, but helping all us volunteers make the best radio possible during this pandemic. And you can help us if you're able by becoming a member of KBOO or renewing your membership if you're already a member. We're independent, community-supported, volunteer-powered radio. Go to kboo.fm/give or text KBOO to 44321. Or please support the community station you're listening to right now. Thanks for supporting Community Powered Radio. I'm Barbara Bernstein. My engineer is Ray Bodwell. Next week, we'll talk with Candace Avalos about the proposal to change Portland's city charter. We'll go out with Heat Wave by Martha and the Vandellas. Thanks for listening. Stay safe, get your COVID shots, and remember to socially distance and wear a mask when necessary.